Yes, it's the rousing theme music from the Pink Five trilogy. Hello, everyone. This is Trey Stokes, the director and mostly writer, although in Return of Pink Five, I'm co-writer of the Pink Five movies that you apparently like, which we thank you again for doing. I should point out right now, we're not watching the movie yet. This is just me talking. We'll be watching the movie in just a minute, and I'll tell you how to do that when the time comes. So this is a commentary track experiment, you might say. This is the first one we're going to try and do, or I'm going to try and do. It's just me here. We may add some other folks bringing their own perspective to other commentary tracks, because there's so many different stories that we could tell and different aspects of the production we could talk about. If people are interested enough, we'll see how this one does. So in this commentary, I'll just focus on, I guess you could call it the big picture, although I'll probably run off on some tangents as I watch it. So I'll start by saying that this script for Return of Pink Five was written by myself and Chris Hannell. The other prior two movies were just written by me alone. But in this one, I brought in Chris Hannell, who, of course, is a consummate Star Wars geek and quite well known in the Star Wars fan film world in his own right for movies such as The Formula and Digital Llama Radio and a few other things like that. So he became a very important part of the team, both as a co-writer and as the visual effects supervisor for it, and good for him. So Chris and I essentially locked ourselves in a room in my house for 3 days and hammered out the first draft of the Return of Pink Five script, which, with very few changes, became the final script of Return of Pink Five. The only way that it changed was that we actually added to it as we shot some things, mostly in that people came with costumes that we didn't think we could get, things like Vader and a few other things that I won't even talk about yet because they're in Volume 2 or Volume 3. That we didn't think we'd be able to get in the movie, and then we found someone who said, I've got that costume, yeah, sure, I'd love to bring it down and you guys can use it. So it turned out that we could shoot not just everything we wrote that we kind of dreamed up, but even more that we didn't think we would ever get. So the film got larger as we were shooting it, which of course led to some complications down the road. And our goal was not just to string a whole bunch of Star Wars jokes together, which is essentially what the first movie is, the first movie being the original Pink Five, which is just a collection of jokes that Amy and I just kind of knocked together really quickly and never really had any grand plans for, and, you know, who knew? So by the time we came to do this one, we wanted to say, well, it's going to be longer and it's going to be more elaborate and it's going to be a lot of effort in it, so let's try and make a real movie out of it if we can. It's still a spoof and it's still a comedy and it's still silly, but what if we also could make it a real movie, or at least make it feel like a real movie, where you actually started to, I hope, care about what happens? And, of course, you be the judge of whether we did that, but that was our goal. So that's why this movie is much more elaborate and not quite as funny in terms of jokes per minute, because sometimes we're just telling the story. Hopefully it's still funny, though, at times. All right, so here's how this is going to work. What you're going to do is, in a few seconds, I'm going to tell you to pause this playback of this audio file you're listening to. And in that pause, what you're going to do, you're going to go to Atom Films, and you're going to go to the page of Return of Pink 5, Volume 1. And or open up your illegally downloaded copy. You know who you are. But otherwise, for the rest of you law-abiding citizens, please go to atomfilms.com and go to the Return of Pink 5 Volume 1 page and press the player there. Get that started. The first thing you'll see is the ad that Atom Films will put on the beginning of the movie. Once the ad is over, you will get a pause control and a volume control for the actual Pink 5 movie itself. So set the volume control all the way to the lowest setting so you can mostly hear me and maybe a little bit of the original soundtrack. And you can also pause it to get yourself all queued up with this audio track, however you're choosing to play it. And when the ad is over, you will see Long, Long Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. And when the blue text fades to black, that's when you press play on this commentary. The commentary starts when the yellow Pink 5 logo appears on the screen. All right, here we go. I'm going to tell you to pause in just a moment, and then when you press play again, I'm going to start talking about Return of Pink 5. Okay? 3, 2, 1, pause. And with the haunting Pink 5 theme, here we are in sync. And there's our opening crawl for Volume 1. And by the way, a conceit that we've used ever since the very first Pink 5 movie is that our opening crawl always could be talking about the original movie, or it could be talking about our movie, and of course it's talking about both, really. So this movie, we jumped right into starting at Jabba's Palace, which means that we've skipped a lot of things going on between how Pink Five Strikes Back ends and how this one begins, because we want to just get right to the good stuff. So you don't need to know how Stacy infiltrated the palace, just like you don't know how Lando infiltrated the palace in Return of the Jedi, but just assume that he figured out a way. And I should point out that right here in this scene, right at the beginning of this very scene, there's something that goes on that's actually a setup for how the entire movie ends. And I'm not talking about Volume 1. I'm talking about the very end of Return of Pink 5. At the end of Volume 3, right here, we're setting up a little something about how it ends. So listen closely and watch closely, and maybe you can see it coming. And of course, Amy in the slave girl bikini, you're welcome. So we've skipped how Stacy got here, and we've gone right to her reason for being here, which is, of course, that she's here to rescue her boyfriend, Han Solo. And there she goes, and there's a lovely all-digital shot, except for Stacy and the table next to her is all digital. And in this scene, we're doing a number of things that we wanted to do. One is to, of course, duplicate Star Wars as best we could. If you look at the matching scene in Return of the Jedi, we did pretty well, especially pay special attention to that bowl of fruit, that plate of fruit there, because that's something I'm especially proud of. But one of the things we wanted to do here is we'd like to take scenes from Star Wars and re-show them to you from a different point of view and give you a different sort of attitude about them. So in this scene, which is, of course, in the original film, is about Leia rescuing Han, this scene, instead of being a triumph of true love, becomes a tragedy from Stacy's perspective, which is something that we try and do throughout the whole series, all our Pink 5 movies, is have you look at Star Wars a little differently. Han falling becomes a little bit of a slapstick moment, in fact. By the way, all character voices are duplicated. We could have just stolen the originals, but we didn't. That is, in fact, me doing Han, and quite often, far too often, in fact, if you hear an off-screen voice or a character voice being duplicated, it's me. I'm also the voice of Salacious and just about every incidental and the voice of Greta in the previous scene, because it's always me sitting here at the computer, so who else is going to do it? So this here's the beginning of the big character turning point. That's me as Jabba laughing. Yeah, it's always me. It's all about me. The big turning point for Stacy's character, where she turns to the dark side, which was something we thought was, well, okay, there's a way to take this movie in a different direction that people won't have seen coming, I would hope, that she actually switches sides, which is something that, of course, no one ever does in Star Wars, but Stacy, since she's not aware that she's in Star Wars, doesn't think that there's any reason not to. So as part of her big disappointment and her heartbreak, she's going to change to the opposite side. Pause while we look at my sandstorm scene, which I think turned out rather well, actually, for someone who's really not trained in visual effects. I'm really not. Most of what I've learned to do hands-on with visual effects, I learned by doing these movies. So it's not a bad job, I guess. And of course, our incredible X-Wing set. And I really will need to do a commentary that's just about the sets and the costumes and all the technical shooting of, because it's amazing, a lot of work by a lot of people. But just marvel at our beautiful X-Wing, which I'm very happy with. Here comes the amazing Steve Stanton, ladies and gentlemen. A moment of silence for his little entrance. Thank you very much. And just because I get this question a lot, I'll just say it now. She's not naked, ladies and gentlemen. When we're shooting this, she's not nude. Our costume department is very clever, and, you know, there's nothing to see here. Move along. There's no director's cut in which everything is shown. Relax. Get over it. Anyway, this scene was an interesting behind-the-scenes thing about this was, it was shot. We shot this, of course, fairly early in the production, and I cut it together. But it was a very different scene than it is as you see it right now. There was a whole other series of events that took place in this scene in its original form. There was a big slapstick moment, for example, which you don't see anymore. And that's because after I'd cut it and we'd done all the effects on it, even the scene was done. Once we had the rest of the film assembled around it, there was an issue of tone, and I didn't feel the tone was right to play this scene quite so broadly as we had been doing and quite so slapstick and to go for the joke. And that's because I was concerned as we were shooting it, we were concerned when we were writing it, and we were concerned when we were shooting it, that the movie wasn't going to be funny, or at least not funny enough. Certainly not as funny as the original Pink 5, which is just 4 minutes of Amy saying funny stuff nonstop. We knew it wasn't going to be that funny. We didn't mean for it to be that funny, but we thought maybe, what if it's not funny at all? And that would be terrible. So we went for this sort of jokey version of this scene. And then after I had the whole movie assembled and I was a little more confident in how the whole movie was playing out, I went back to this scene and I recut it not too long before we delivered it to Adam Films, and even had to redo some of these effect shots to accommodate the new cut, because it seemed that it needed to be played more straight, which, if the situation wasn't so ridiculous, it's a fairly straight scene. It has funny stuff in it, I hope, but it's not a big joke scene. But it was important to set up the character to say, this is where I'm going and this is what I want to do, to get the story moving forward. And of course, what she wants to do is change sides. So here she is on her way, if you're in sync with me, on her way to the Death Star. So here's a scene with a joke in it. Okay, so we're back to some jokes. But it's also a scene that starts to set up something that we haven't really displayed all that much yet, but wanted to start bringing out, and that is that Stacy is a Jedi. Stacy has become a Jedi. Stacy can use the Force. The reason for that is, of course, that she spent a year on Dagobah with Yoda and got some good training, and more training than Luke did, in fact. So one of the ideas of Return of Pink Five is that Stacy's actually a more powerful Jedi than Luke is, because she's been at it longer. Luke got, a week of training? Stacy got a year. So here she is. Here's Swamp Stacy or Dark Stacy or whatever, jumping out of her X-Wing and marvel again at our beautiful X-Wing set with the working turbine. Very happy with that. So this is to show that, this is not Stacy from before. This is a different version of Stacy now. She's been through a lot. She's matured in certain ways, although she's just as unaware as ever in other ways. But she does know some things she didn't know before, and she certainly has some skills she didn't have before. She just still hasn't figured out that she's in a Star Wars movie and she should be taking it seriously. Now, right about here is probably where you're thinking, he hasn't even mentioned Amy. Well, first of all, I could probably do an entire commentary just about Amy and what all she did for this film. But what is there to say about Amy, for heaven's sake? She's in every frame. She's the glue that's holding the whole movie together. It's all about her and this character of hers that people respond to so much. And of course, you want her to do her own commentary, but I won't speak for her. That's entirely for her to decide if she wants to do it or not. I won't promise it. So this scene, too, continues that idea that Stacy doesn't get it enough, that she doesn't know that she's supposed to fear Darth Vader. She doesn't know that the Emperor is dangerous. She's just here looking for a job. This, too, is another scene where we take a familiar setting and a familiar set of characters from Star Wars and we try and adjust them without feeling like we've broken the rules. And I hope we didn't feel like we broke the rules, that these characters aren't doing things that are just because it'd be funny if Darth Vader did something. We're trying to make it at least somewhat plausible that these characters could be this way when you weren't watching them in the other movie. What do Vader and the Emperor talk about in the throne room when it's just them? They've got such a history together. They must have a shorthand, just like Yoda and Obi-Wan probably talk differently when it's just the two of them than when they're on camera being all heroic. So this scene is partly about trying to show what the other sides of those characters might be, and hopefully in a funny way. Steve Stanton again as the Emperor, by the way, if you didn't spot that, but that's the amazing Steve Stanton in makeup now as the Emperor. So this scene here is to really underscore that not only is she not afraid of Vader, she doesn't really have a reason to be afraid of Vader. He's just an old dude, and she's the new generation of Jedi that she can handle herself pretty well. I haven't watched this scene in quite a while, and I'm watching it, it looks all right. I'm kind of happy with how it turned out. It's nice to come back to something that you weren't sure was working that well and look at it again and be happy with what you did. It's good to have that perspective. And there you go. For the joke people, there's our joke. There's our big throne room joke with the respirator. Okay, now we're going to get back to our story now. Here's a thing that we try to do several times. You see it in Strikes Back with the Yoda scene with the lightsaber hairdryer. You're seeing it here, where when you're trying to do a scene that is coming out fairly straight, where there is a funny byplay going on between the Emperor and Stacy, but at the same time you've got this other joke working in the background. That you've got the Vader choking, wheezing played on top of that. And I actually got that from, believe it or not, the guys who make the Police Squad movies and the Airplane movies. Specifically said that they try and do that, and certainly you can see that in their movies. And I stole that idea from them and used it here, that you've got the foreground joke and the background joke going at the same time. The scene always gets a good laugh when we show it live, which I'm pleased, because, of course, you never know if you've got the laughs really working or not. So now it's time to introduce really our one new plot element that you really don't find in the original Return of the Jedi, and that's the idea of the second shield that the Emperor refers to here. And if you didn't catch that the second shield is going to be a little important later, well, then I guess we didn't do our jobs very well. And trying to set it up without it being a huge red flag that says, this is really important. It's just something we try and mention in passing. But it is important to know that there is a second shield on the Death Star reactor. So having gotten that out of the way, it's time to get the episode over. Now, again, pointing out that this was not meant to be the end of the episode, that there was no such thing as episodes to Return of Pink 5 when we were writing it and shooting it. It just was supposed to keep on going, but it turned out we had to break it. So we broke it right here, which made a sensible act break. So having turned to the dark side and joined the Emperor and become his potential new apprentice and this whole new dynamic being started was the appropriate place to end the act. At one point, I actually continued the movie until the next scene and ended it there, but it felt better to end it here rather than go on to the next scene. So the very next scene in Volume 2 will continue from here, but you won't be seeing it until Volume 2 comes out. This, of course, was supposed to just hook right into the next scene rather than have it be the end, so I had to add this last little joke in with a voiceover with the Vader help me up. It was not originally planned. It was just something that we jammed in at the end, so at least we'd go out on a laugh. Although it was nice that it was actually kind of nice to pull back and just have the Emperor laughing and have the really creepy, very serious ending, but I figured we should just go for the laugh. And there you go. That's this commentary for Volume 1. And please do go to ping5.com because so many names that you don't see in these credits are there from the literally hundreds of people who actually did contribute to the making of this movie. And we thank every single one of them in person and on screen if possible. So that's a commentary for Volume 1, and presumably there will be others in which we'll talk about specific details of this or that. Certainly we can do an entire one about visual effects, we could do an entire one about the actual process of shooting on stage, we could do one about the actors, etc., etc. So if you like this commentary, well, hey, we'll make more. This is Trey Stokes, signing off.